The committee will come to order. Without objection, the chair is authorized to declare recess of the committee at any time. This subcommittee is holding our third hearing on PFAS contamination, focusing on the need for corporate accountability. I now recognize myself for 5 minutes to give an opening statement.
That's Democratic Congressman Harley Ruda. He chaired the congressional investigation that's called The Devil They Knew. The devil is the chemical PFAS, and chemical companies 3M and DuPont are the ones that knew the devil.
If the subcommittee's last two hearings haven't made it abundantly clear, we're dealing with a national emergency here. PFAS chemicals have
the committee room is full today. That's because the witnesses include DuPont and 3M and lawyer Rob Bilott. Rob Bilott was the first to bring PFAS to wide attention when he sued DuPont for West Virginia cattle rancher Earl Tennant. His book Exposure, about the case and the cover-up by DuPont, had just been published, and the movie Dark Waters, based on his book, was just weeks away from being released. And both the book and movie were generating a lot of interest. Everyone knew DuPont and 3M would be asked some tough questions about their behavior over the chemical family PFAS. And everyone expected fireworks. Welcome to the Poison Detectives Podcast, a production of the National Observer. This podcast is made possible by the Dragonfly Fund in collaboration with the Institute of Sustainability and Education and Action. Among the Dragonfly priorities is working towards a toxic-free world for the health of people and the planet. I'm Sandra Bartlett, and this is Episode 4, The Devil They Knew.
Think about a 55-gallon barrel of fuel, and we spray water right into that barrel, and it's on fire. It's going to just spread fire all over the place. What we want to do is essentially put a lid on it. The lid is basically that foam.
One of the earliest uses for PFAS chemicals was in firefighting foam. In 1966, the U.S. Navy patented a foam it had created with the chemical company 3M. The foam was made from 3M's new synthetic chemical, PFAS, which stands for per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances. Called AFFF, for aqueous film-forming foam, it was a game-changer for what are called Class B fires, fuel-based fires.
We apply the foam blanket either in front of or behind or rain it down, and our three different basic techniques are to create a foam blanket over that flaming liquid. That puts it out without disturbing it.
That was from an education video about AFFF. After the Navy started using it, other branches of the military took it up. Then airports began to use it, training and practicing in case of a plane crash. And firefighters loved how it worked so quickly on fires involving gas, oil, solvent, paint. The fires could be put out or under control quickly, allowing time to look for people trapped in the fire zone.
Our number one priority is always life safety. And so it's how do we extinguish or control the fire and then rescue the people from the car. We apply the foam blanket.
But after the foam puts out the fire, it settles into the soil, and over time, as it accumulates, it moves down into the water table or is washed from the soil into nearby streams and rivers and lakes. But back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, few people thought about that. But in actual fact, the Navy had some concerns about the toxicity of the foam back in 1995, and they made it public in an article in the Journal of the National Fire Protection Association. Remember, this association sets the standard for firefighting gear, including AFFF foam, and is responsible for keeping firefighters safe. The Journal introduced the article this way.
The fire protection community has become concerned about the potentially adverse impact of foam discharges on the environment, particularly those that breach natural or domestic water systems.
After going through all the ways the foam could get into the water, it offered this warning.
It is important to evaluate the drinking water and to use alternate water sources until you are certain that surfactant concentrations no longer exist.
And then this zinger.
Water that foams when shaken should not be drunk. It has probably been contaminated by firefighting foam.
The authors were two members of the Navy, someone from the Chemicals Specialty Division of 3M, and foam manufacturer Aqueous Foam Technology. After the article, the National Fire Protection Association created a task force to study the issue. But there's no evidence anything came of it. Like the companies 3M and DuPont, for more than two decades, the military studied PFAS chemicals, held meetings, sometimes with the Environmental Protection Agency, as it accumulated evidence of its toxicity. In 2011, the Department of Defense, the DOD, issued a risk alert to military bases, and in 2016, advised bases to prevent uncontrolled releases of the foam. In 2018, the DOD reported to Congress there were 401 military sites with known or suspected contamination. Suddenly, people were paying attention to the military bases in their communities and asking questions. Senate and congressional committees held hearings to learn about PFAS contamination of drinking water. And ordinary people got a chance to speak there about PFAS contamination from industry in their communities.
My name is Emily Donovan. Today I'd like to speak to you as a mother who has spent the last 2 years getting a crash course in biochemistry. Imagine waking up to headlines that the same company who spent a historic $670 million to settle over 3,500 lawsuits in another state for poisoning their drinking water was doing the exact same thing to yours.
Emily lives in Wilmington, North Carolina. Remember in an earlier episode when we heard that in 2000, the company 3M stopped producing two PFAS chemicals? And then DuPont built their own plant to replace those chemicals? Well, DuPont built it in North Carolina. Chemours, a DuPont company, runs the plant and had been releasing its wastewater into Cape Fear River for decades. The river is a source of drinking water not just for Wilmington, but for 350,000 people.
Wilmington residents have three times more C8PFOA in their blood than the national average and two times more PFOS, and these two chemicals were phased out a decade ago. Residents also have a special chemical cocktail found in the blood not seen anywhere else in our state. Some of these PFAS were in 99% of the blood samples taken. 99%.
People in this area only learned about the contamination in 2017 from a newspaper story and started putting two and two together about their health issues.
How many of your friends are battling cancer? I am 42, and my friend Sarah is battling stage 3 colon cancer. My friend Tom, who's here today, is terminal brain and bone cancer. And my friend Kara has stage 3 breast cancer. Her gallbladder stopped working and recently developed hypothyroidism. And her mom has blood cancer. And her dad over here has leukemia and bladder cancer. And my own husband had a benign brain tumor and almost lost his eyesight. And I am frightened.
In the summer of 2023, it became clear just how big the problem was in the U.S.
A new study finds that nearly half of the nation's drinking water contains potentially harmful forever chemicals. The substances have been linked to several serious health problems, including some cancers.
This study was done by the U.S. Geological Survey, which does research on environmental, resource, and public safety issues. It started collecting tap water samples in 2016 to find out just how widespread was the drinking water contamination. With volunteers around the country, it collected 716 tap water samples and then tested for 32 different PFAS chemicals. Kelly Smalling is a research hydrologist with the Geological Survey. She told CBS News where the contamination was the heaviest.
So based on the results of our study, what we found were that PFAS were more frequently observed in tap water samples that were collected in or around urban areas, as well as areas with known sources of PFAS, like airports, industry, military installations, and wastewater treatment plants.
Canada is in a similar situation. The AFFF foam has also been used at military bases, airports, as well as by community firefighters since the 1960s. but there hasn't been any Canada-wide testing of drinking water.
That's the Canadian approach. We don't have a problem, and if we find we do, we just send out a federal action plan and ask for comments.
Beverly Thorpe is a longtime advocate for safer chemicals. She's worked for Greenpeace and now works with Clean Production Action. It's an environmental organization that designs and creates green chemical solutions. She says Canadian regulators have their head in the sand on PFAS chemicals.
Well, we don't manufacture it. It's a big problem in the U.S., but we don't have the same problem in Canada. You know, and then I said, well, we've been using it on military bases and airports for decades. Yes, and then the response was, but we don't have as many military bases.
That's true because the U.S. has a bigger military footprint. But there are 26 military bases across Canada, and PFAS chemicals have been found in the soil and or in the water in every one of them. The Department of National Defense has tested community water supplies near some of these bases. North Bay, Ontario, learned in 2016 that a lake and several creeks where it gets its drinking water are contaminated with PFAS. The contamination came from the city's airport, where the military did firefighting training from the 1970s to the 1990s. Residue from the firefighting foam made its way into the waterways. A drinking water and fish consumption advisory was put in place for one of the waterways, and bottled water was provided to some area residents. So far, the Department of Defense has paid $20 million to the city for the cleanup. The final cost could be closer to $40 million. In written communication with me, the Department of National Defense identified several communities with high PFAS levels in their drinking water. Mountain View, a small community near Belleville, Ontario, and two private wells near the Wainwright, Alberta base. The military is providing bottled water to these communities. People living near the bases in Comox, BC, and Edmonton were told their wells are contaminated with PFAS, but bottled water has not been provided for them and no explanation was given for that. The Bagotville base near Saguenay, Quebec, knew since 2011 that firefighting foam had contaminated the groundwater, but didn't share that information. The city of Saguenay only learned of the contamination in October of 2022. Dominic Arsenault is a spokesperson for the city. Once the city was told about the contamination, he says it tested the drinking water in all of its boroughs.
Our PFAS levels are incredibly low everywhere in the city, except in that particular area of La Baie.
La Baie is a former town, now part of the city of Saguenay. But Saguenay, like many big cities, has several wells for its drinking water. La Baie has the bad luck to be on the well contaminated by the military base. Saguenay was in the same situation as every other community in North America. They hadn't been testing for PFAS chemicals because they didn't know they existed. But now they had to study up fast.
So we've been in touch with the Ministry of Environment, with the public health authorities from the provincial government, and their response was that as things stand, the water in La Baie is still okay to drink, but we do need to take action to reduce the level of PFAS in the water.
Dominic says the city quickly realized it had two issues to deal with: get safe drinking water to the 8,000 people living in La Baie and abandon the well that was contaminated and find a new source for the community.
Changing a source of drinking water is a process that takes several years because you need to find a source that has enough water. Then you're going to have to build the plant, the filtration plant, then have pipes to bring it to everyone's homes and businesses. So this is a process that will take at least 5 to 6 years.
But Saguenay's immediate job was getting clean tap water into the homes in La Baie.
Every single drop of water that will be pumped from the underground source before it's distributed to the people of La Baie will go through a filter that will eliminate the PFAS. And we chose that technology because it allows us to filter every single drop of water that comes out.
He says the filters will be changed regularly, but contaminated with PFAS, they create a disposal problem.
The way to destroy them is cremation. So those filters, it's possible to actually cremate them, destroy the PFAS, and you just replace the filters once in a while.
And the PFAS is destroyed along with the filter. The cost for the filtering system, about $12 million, is paid for by the federal government. Negotiations are in progress for paying the cost of the new water source. Why did the military wait so long to tell them about the contamination? The Department of Defense didn't offer the city an explanation.
I wish they would be there to answer this question, but they told us that they stopped using the foams in early 2000, so apparently they're not using them anymore.
I wanted to have a go at asking the military why they waited so long. But despite having 68,000 military personnel, no one was available to speak with me. But they did provide test results for LeBay. Now, I'm going to go through a lot of numbers. Hang in there with me. They're important. Testing of the wells that supply water to LeBay found PFAS levels between 104 and 185 parts per trillion. Surprisingly, that's not above Health Canada guidelines. There are 600 parts per trillion for one PFAS chemical and 200 parts per trillion for another, but it's higher than the EPA standard at the time of 70 parts per trillion. Although the 8,000 residents of LeBay were told the water is safe to drink, no one really knows what a safe level is. And for this scientist, there's a logic problem with what people are being told.
I must be the only one that doesn't seem it's totally coherent to be spending $12 million for removing PFAS from drinking water if you can drink the water.
That's Sebastian Sauvé. He's a professor of environmental chemistry at the University of Montreal. He studies what are called emerging contaminants, and PFAS has had his attention for several years.
We have enough information to be concerned, but not yet clear regulation. So it's a work in progress, but we are the guinea pigs in it.
The acceptable limits for PFAS in drinking water has been a moving target for the past decade. Sebastian Sauvé says studies show there are health dangers at lower and lower levels.
We have enough information to be worried about PFAS, but we don't have enough information to be clear as to how we should be handling it.
He says anything that is bioaccumulative, that is, every exposure adds more and more PFAS to our bodies, is a big problem. For example, he points out that PFAS accumulation affects our immune system.
I simplify, but as the concentration of PFAS in our blood doubles, the response to vaccination is reduced by a quarter. Basically, less antibodies, less response. But that's one of the things that's easy to measure. Other impacts on the immune system are more difficult to measure.
But like any toxic substance that takes time to do its damage, it can make it easy for some to deny the risk.
So all of these are just insidious impacts that take their toll over quite a good period of time, so that they're a bit easier to just push under the carpet and say, well, this is not that bad. Nobody's dying from it.
For 3 years, 2018 to 2020, Sebastian's research team collected water samples across Quebec and tested for PFAS chemicals, all in ordinary places.
So basically, we just stop in a restaurant, we go to the restroom and we fill the bottle of water, or we go to a gas station into the bathroom and we fill the bottle of water, park with a water fountain and we just fill the water bottle. So basically, we access publicly available water.
Of the 463 samples, 99% had some PFAS chemicals. Remember, there are thousands of members of the PFAS family. Sebastian found 54 different ones. Most of the levels weren't as high as what was found in LeBay, but Sebastian says they still need to be removed.
We would like the water to be down to zero PFAS, but this is probably billions of dollars to treat all of the water to bring it down to, let's say, close to zero.
This kind of widespread testing of community water for PFAS is rare in Canada. As a result, we don't know how big a problem we have in our drinking water. A research study in Ontario could provide people in the country's largest province with the first information on PFAS in drinking water.
My name is Scott Hopkins, and I am a chemistry professor at the University of Waterloo. The team consists of three research laboratories: the Ontario Clean Water Agency, the Canadian Water and Wastewater Association, six municipal water treatment facilities, and an environmental conservation group. So we've all sort of come together with different expertise.
They started in the fall of 2022.
These different groups will now start taking weekly samples for a period of 6 weeks. This will be at, you know, the input of a water treatment plant and the output, maybe somewhere in the middle, a few places that are sort of environmental waters, you know, usually rivers that and lakes that might be in areas of interest. Then that process is going to be repeated several times per year for the next 3 years or so.
It will be at least 3 years before Scott Hopkins' study will know how big the PFAS problem is in Ontario drinking water. And other studies are already showing that it takes only a small amount of PFAS to cause problems.
As the concentrations that are allowable become lower and lower, we need to have more and more sensitive methods for detecting and quantifying, telling how much PFAS there is out there.
The thing is, no agency, neither federal nor provincial, is taking the lead in finding out how much PFAS is in the drinking water and creating a plan and a budget to get rid of it. The Canadian Water and Wastewater Association says municipalities are caught in the middle between wanting to ensure they're providing the cleanest drinking water possible and waiting for direction and funding.
I'm Robert Haller, and I'm the executive director of the Canadian Water and Wastewater Association. So we're the professional association for the municipal water and wastewater sector.
Robert says as members of the American Water Works Association, they keep an eye on what the EPA is doing, as does Health Canada.
We go to American water conferences, all of us, and we'll pay attention to what's happening there, but we'll direct it back to Health Canada. It'd be Health Canada that is most closely monitoring the EPA.
Robert says Health Canada put out a discussion paper in 2018 and then a review in 2021.
And in 2023, they released a paper that was setting out objective values, and it's with Health Canada right now as to the final guidelines for what municipalities will eventually be doing for PFAS.
So until then, they wait, as do all Canadians concerned about PFAS in their drinking water. Last spring, when the U.S. EPA dropped its level from 70 parts per trillion to 4 parts per trillion, it said it couldn't set it lower because lab equipment can't identify PFAS below 4 parts per trillion. Canada's regulator, Environment Canada, is talking about setting the drinking water guideline at 30 parts per trillion. Beverly Thorpe of Clean Production Action says a guideline isn't mandatory. Some communities will follow it. Others will ignore it.
We have no provincial regulations on PFAS and drinking water quality. And I sometimes wonder if it's kind of a convenient justification for why there's lack of action. You know, the feds will say, well, we were amongst the first countries to restrict two types of PFAS chemicals. Or we partake in all these OECD working groups and this, that, and the other, and the Stockholm Convention. Yes, but what's happening in Canada? Well, you know, it's up to the provinces to pass drinking water regulations.
Then there are the airports. Every city in Canada has at least one. Towns and smaller communities have one within driving distance. There are 41 airports with air traffic controllers and dozens of regional airports.
We don't have regulations on PFAS, spring firefighting foam. It's sort of like a voluntary option that Transport Canada will now allow airports to use PFAS free foam voluntarily.
The Department of Defense provided information to me that showed that AFFF foam is still used in crash responses, emergency situations only, they say, because it's the safest tool they have to put out a fire. Just down the road from Canadian Defense Headquarters is a company of former firefighters who say they have a solution to PFAS foam. Quincy Emmons is one of the founders and the president of Fire Rain.
It was about 12 years ago, I started looking into the foams that we were using. The salespeople were coming around and talking to, just, you know, would stop in, have general conversations. And they always used greenwashing terms like, oh, it's biodegradable, don't worry about it. It's totally safe.
And then he stumbled onto information about the content of the foams.
You know, just simple searching and then reading what was really in there, they cross-referenced it. And then when I started looking at that, I'm like, this stuff is bad. Like, we shouldn't be using this at all.
He did more research and decided that the future of firefighting foam is not foam, but gel. He and his partner started working with researchers at the Green Centre Canada at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario. And they had one important criterion.
It was a tongue-in-cheek comment in the room is how, when we were asked, how safe do you want it? And we're like, let's make it safe enough to eat.
And the lab managed to do that.
Basically, vegetable oils, some starches and gums. That's pretty well it. But the certification that we do confirms that there is no toxic synthetic chemicals in our ingredients.
Its name, EcoGel. He says a key element of the gel is that it stays where it's applied, doesn't drift like foam. And once the gel has smothered the fire,
we get the swelling that we need and create the sticky stuff that we do, but at a certain point, it just breaks down.
Once they were confident about their gel, they started shopping it around. Quincy describes the reaction when they did a demonstration for firefighters in Chicago.
You have to do each testing 3 times, so it's consistent. And everybody was laughing at the fuel fire test until the fire went out, and then it was dead silent. The next time we do the test, there's more people in the window watching than what was the first time. And by the end of the day, the room was packed and people were pulling us aside outside saying, you guys got something here. We've never seen a product do this.
There's been a lot of interest in South America and Europe, especially for wildfires, Quincy says, because PFAS-made foams are banned there. But here in North America, the company faced an uphill battle when it tried to get certified.
There's a listing under Underwriters Laboratories called the UL-162. That's also listing that a fire chief will look for to know that a foam has met the standards as tested by UL.
That's Peter Sells, one of the company founders and the former chief training officer for Toronto's fire service. He says it's hard to sell the gel to a fire chief without the UI stamp of approval.
So if fire chief says, well, do you guys have UL-162? We'll say no, because we don't make bubbles. You know, a lot of the criteria that would be under UL-162 don't apply to a hydrogel.
Quincy shakes his head as he remembers how getting past the bubbles requirement wasn't easy.
The standards are thou shalt make bubbles. We don't make bubbles. We make water thick and stick.
Fire chiefs in many communities across Canada are looking for safe foam replacements and are willing to give up on the bubbles.
We've always understood that it had some toxic traits. We understand that from the material safety data sheets, but we didn't understand how toxic or persistent, but we knew it wasn't good.
Matt Key is the deputy fire chief for the city of Markham, just northeast of Toronto. The community of 350,000 was using 2 firefighting foams. One for regular fires, a second for combustible liquids like solvent, oil, and ethyl alcohol. Matt wanted to find a new one that would work for both fires. That's when he discovered PFAS and its dangers in the foams.
It definitely shifted our investigation into a different path, looking for safer alternatives at that point.
Matt says in his research he stumbled on the FireRain website. The site described its product as the first certified plant-based alternative.
It sounded interesting, but it kept referring to itself as a gel. And again, this is post my education. I wasn't looking for a gel. There is no NFP standard for gel. It's only foam. I'm a firefighter at heart, and I needed to see it work.
Matt and several firefighters went to the FireRain plant for a demonstration of the gel.
And we'll watch them put out some heptane, which is a hydrocarbon fuel, but it was very effective at putting it out. And what I found really interesting is it stayed out. They could not reignite it. And that's not something I've seen before in fire suppressing foams.
His team liked that it would not damage the environment after putting out a fire. No rivers, streams, and ultimately drinking water would be contaminated.
It's not what it is. It's what it isn't. It's a completely bio-based product. If you look at its SDS, its safety data sheet, there's no toxicity.
As they were switching over from the foam to the gel, he was reminded again about the dangers of the foam. He had a hard time finding a company that would remove the chemical from the fire trucks and dispose of it. Some companies declined to even bid on the job.
We eventually found a large international hazardous materials disposal company that was willing to take the job on. It wasn't inexpensive. It was worth it, but it wasn't inexpensive. So they removed it, took it to an incinerator near Windsor to be disposed of at high temperature, so it's responsibly removed.
In 2019, the U.S. Congress turned its attention to PFAS with an investigation called The Devil They Knew. The first hearing focused on PFAS contamination in the water around military bases. Dave Ross of the EPA and Maureen Sullivan from the Department of Defense, DOD, were the first witnesses. Committee Chair Harley Ruda set the tone.
We're holding this hearing to understand what has gone wrong, why the executive branch isn't taking more serious action to address the PFAS crisis. DOD has stated that any federal effort to contain the spread of PFAS must be led by the EPA. But to put it charitably, it is unclear why the DOD feels justified in passing the buck to the EPA.
At the time of the hearings, the EPA had not put PFAS on its list of toxic chemicals. It had not set any national standards for PFAS chemicals in drinking water. But it had released an action plan just before the hearings began. One Congresswoman, Katie Hill, zeroed in on the lack of action in the EPA's action plan.
So last month, the EPA announced its action plan, which I appreciate, but the plan didn't call for action. The EPA delayed the decision on setting the maximum contaminant levels for PFOA and PFOS until the end of this year. So, Mr. Ross, why did the EPA choose to delay another 10 months to make a decision regarding these chemicals?
The EPA did not choose to delay additional 10 months. What we heard from stakeholders and from a wide variety of people in the country is that this was a multifaceted, complicated problem. It's about what we know and don't know about the science.
It might be a complicated problem, but was it being made more complicated by outsiders?
It's been reported by Politico that Dave Dunlap, a former Koch Industries official who now works in the EPA's Office of Research and Development, participated in, quote, at least 9 PFAS meetings in Mr. Dunlap's first 6 weeks on the job. This raises serious questions regarding Mr. Dunlap's potential conflicts of interest and any influence he may have had to delay regulations of these chemicals. So, Mr. Ross, were any lobbyists or industry representatives involved in the decision to delay regulation of these chemicals?
I have not taken a meeting with the regulated entities that you're talking about. Mr. Dunlap, just like every other political appointee in their program offices, has participated together with our career deputies in this overall holistic effort.
Not exactly a direct answer to the question. Canada didn't have the big 3M or DuPont factories. Back in 2008, the government banned the use, sale, or import of PFAS or a product containing PFAS unless it was there incidentally, whatever that means, or was in one of the categories of allowable use. That allowable use included firefighting foam and firefighting turnout gear. Later, Canada added some other members of the PFAS family. But the ban mostly works on the honor system. There's no testing of products for PFAS content. But as a result of those decisions, Canada's never had factories making PFAS or industries using it in production. And for a long time, the government said that's why PFAS was not a real problem for Canadians. So Canadian politicians have not had any hearings about PFAS contamination on military bases and airports, in rivers and streams, and drinking water. Environmental advocates say Canada is falling behind in getting a handle on the problem.
The longer we wait, the more PFAS enters our surface waters. And the longer it's going to be around in our drinking water.
Miriam Diamond is an environmental chemist in the Department of Earth Sciences at the University of Toronto. Like Sebastian Sauvé in Quebec, she studies chemical contaminants and has been looking at PFAS chemicals.
What I really don't like about the Canadian system is the access that industry has to the process.
Miriam served as a co-chair of the Science Committee for the federal government's Canadian Chemicals Management Plan. She saw how government scientists can't keep up with the new chemicals being used in products, and their resources don't compare to those of the industries they're supposed to be studying.
So the industry has access in two ways. First, they have access to the stakeholder group, to the Canadian Chemicals Management Plan.
Stakeholder groups have an interest in an issue, say environmentalists, independent scientists, the public, and of course always industry. These groups provide information and feedback, but aren't at the committee meetings.
They had industry members sitting on the Chemical Management Science Plan Committee. I think that's wrong. There were scientists paid by industry with a vested economic interest in what decisions are made. I don't believe that it's reasonable to have scientists with a vested economic interest sitting at that table. And they had equal voice.
And like the U.S., industry in Canada lobbies, politicians, bureaucrats, scientists. Miriam says environmentalists, the public, and scientists like her can't compete with that much access.
So we were all politely sitting at the table and thought we were going through the front door and not understanding that industry was going through the front door and the back door. I want to be very specific. They belong at a stakeholders table. They don't belong at a science table.
Miriam says a more open process that reins in industry influence would result in stronger health and environmental regulation. For example, she thinks it would level the playing field if industry had to share its data, the data it uses to convince the government that regulations are not necessary or will hurt their business. But she says the Canadian approach is often to wait and see what other agencies are doing, like the EPA.
The longer we wait, the more production occurs, the more use occurs, the more it gets into the environment because it's persistent. That ultimately means more PFAS for us and future generations.
Sparing future generations, the contamination dangers, and the cost of cleanup was the topic at another The Devil They Knew Congressional Committee hearing in the fall of 2019. It went after the corporate behavior of the three big companies that produce PFAS chemicals. This is Committee Chair Harley Ruda.
This is a unique hearing. We have with us today representatives from three corporations, the 3M Company, DuPont, and Chemours. And I believe this is the first time these companies have testified before Congress on the issue of PFAS chemicals. I'd like to welcome our panel and thank them for being here.
But first, the hearing heard from the lawyer who brought the issue to public attention. Rob Bellott sued DuPont on behalf of West Virginia rancher Wilbur Tennant. DuPont settled with Wilbur. And as a result of the court case, Rob had thousands of DuPont internal documents revealing the toxicity of PFAS chemicals. He laid out for the hearing what they revealed.
The public may only now be realizing the scope of this problem, but the companies that manufactured these chemicals have been aware of the risks for decades, but failed to alert the rest of us. I know because I spent the last 20 years of my career in litigation with these companies, pulling out of their own internal files what was already there and was already known about the risks of these chemicals.
Rob took the hearing through the decades.
By the end of the 1970s, DuPont knew that PFAS was building up in the blood of humans and staying there for long periods of time. During the 1980s and 1990s, the company also monitored and was concerned about increased cancer rates among its own workers.
Rob told the committee that this information was also in the hands of the environmental watchdog, the EPA, because he'd sent it to the agency.
I was doing my best during that period of time to funnel as much of the internal information, non-confidential, from within the company files about the health effects of these chemicals to the regulatory agencies so they could take action. That's been going on for 18 years. Those agencies have more than enough information about PFOA, about the related chemistry to act.
And then the committee turned to the companies. 3M was first. Denise Rutherford, Senior Vice President of Corporate Affairs, defended PFAS chemicals when questioned by Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Ms. Rutherford, I want to spend some time here discussing some of 3M's current tactics when it comes to accepting responsibility for PFAS or not accepting responsibility for PFAS contamination. In the lobbying materials by the coalition, it states, and I quote, "The weight of current scientific evidence does not show that PFOS or PFOA cause adverse health effects in humans at current rates of exposure." Ms. Rutherford, do you agree with this statement?
Congresswoman, I absolutely agree with that statement.
This statement goes against 3M's own scientists who for decades have been studying these chemicals and terming them, quote, toxic. For instance, in 1999, Richard Purdy, one of 3M's own scientists, an environmental specialist, resigned his position in protest, calling PFAS, quote, the most insidious pollutant since PCB.
Congresswoman, we are committed to advancing the science and to sharing information to the public domain. But when we look at that evidence, there's no cause and effect for adverse human health effects.
Then it was DuPont's turn for an opening statement. Daryl Roberts, the chief operating and engineering officer, came out of the gate with commitments on PFAS use.
The focus of today's hearing is PFAS. The new DuPont does not manufacture PFAS. Like many other companies today, we use some PFAS materials. However, our use is extremely limited. We have also reaffirmed our commitment to not make, buy, or use long-chain PFAS materials.
The problem with that promise is that it's one science has already deconstructed. Long-chain PFAS chemicals are toxic, but the short-chain replacements are equally toxic. Remember nuclear physicist Graham Peasley, who worked with Diane Carter to test firefighting turnout gear? He also studied the short-chain replacements.
They're actually more soluble, they're shorter chain, they get into the body easier. All sorts of things wrong with the short-chain ones.
But the committee members didn't challenge DuPont on the safety of the newer chemicals. It's likely they didn't know what Graham Peasley knew. DuPont went on to argue that PFAS chemicals should be regulated, but only the two that both DuPont and 3M have abandoned.
Congressman, we don't believe all these chemicals are the same. That's why we support legislation to list PFOA and PFOS and only those two as hazardous substances under CERCLA. That's further than the other companies here are willing to go today, but that's what we believe is correct.
Then the questioning turned to the elephant in the room. Cleaning up PFAS pollution is going to take a long time and a lot of money, a lot of money. It will be billions and billions. Will the companies step up? Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz started by asking about compensation to firefighters and military members.
Are any of your companies that were responsible for using any of these chemicals that firefighters and military service members were exposed to planning any type of compensation to harmed victims? Question for all three of you.
At this point, the DuPont company is focused on cleaning up and remediating the sites which we operate. That's our focus, as well as reducing the amount of firefighting foam that we use in our sites. But that's the limit of where we're focused at this time.
So no.
We are focused on what we...
No.
What's in,
yes
within
or
our
no?
Control.
Yes or no?
We'll continue to focus on what's within our control.
That's not a yes or no answer. Yes or no? Are you planning at any point at compensating people who have been harmed by your company's chemicals?
Congresswoman, you're speaking specifically to
I'm speaking
armed
specifically
forces around
to,
the world?
To this issue specifically.
We are focused on working through
the other two people, if you could answer, please.
Yes.
The answer is no. Let's let the record reflect that the gentleman essentially said no, there are no plans.
You know, again, we have not been involved in PFOA or PFOS, which I think are the...
So your answer is also no.
3M's Denise Rutherford doubled down on her statement that no one's health has been hurt by PFAS chemicals.
Yes or no? Are there any plans that 3M has to compensate victims who have been damaged by your chemicals?
I will reiterate my statement, Congresswoman, that our evidence does not indicate that that adverse human health effects were caused by these foams.
That angered Chairman Arruda.
Ms. Rutherford, I'm deeply confused. You said, I want to make sure I understand this, no one has been harmed by any PFAS chemicals that you are aware of?
Congressman, what I did say...
That's a yes or no. Come on, I don't need a long speech. Yes or no?
We have no definitive cause and effect relationship.
Great. So your point is no one in America right now, no one has been a victim of any PFAS chemicals, all 5,000, including PFOA and PFOS. That is your position.
We state that the majority of the evidence does not indicate that to be true, sir.
Then why the hell do you care there's been a 70% reduction in PFAS levels if it doesn't affect anyone?
Because we know these are concerns of our colleagues, the people in our communities, and all of us. We all want to have confidence in our drinking
water. Damn right.
There was one more hearing a couple of months later. Chairman Ruta laid out the case for immediate action by the Environmental Protection Agency.
Because these chemicals have been cavalierly dumped by corporations in rivers and landfills, they have poisoned pregnant women and permanently injured and damaged their children, who will suffer severe health problems for the rest of their lives. We've got people who are just now realizing they've been drinking contaminated water for years, who have to pray each day that they don't get sick and their families don't get sick. So even now, we might speak about the PFAS crisis in terms that sound impersonal and bureaucratic, like saying we need to regulate these chemicals and set maximum contaminant levels. What we're really trying to say is that we need government to save people's lives.
That was 2019. It took another 2 years before the EPA started the process to designate PFOA and PFOS as hazardous chemicals. When 2023 ended, there was still no regulation of these chemicals. But many U.S. states have filled the gap with their own laws and regulations, restricting or banning these forever chemicals. And in 2023, the EPA lowered the safe level of PFAS chemicals in water from 70 parts per trillion to 4 parts per trillion. In Canada, there is discussion about regulating PFAS chemicals as a class because of their similarities, instead of going one by one. And Health Canada is considering lowering the limit in drinking water to 30 parts per trillion. That would compare to 4 parts per trillion in the U.S. Next time on The Poison Detectives.
Paul was part of a group that had their blood drawn for the lawsuit. And we thought, well, he probably won't have anything left in him, you know, because it's been, well, it was 6 years since he had been a firefighter. When the blood work came back and his were very high, his numbers were very high, it confirmed this had to have been building up in his blood for years of wearing that gear.
The podcast is researched, written, and produced by me, Sandra Bartlett. Story editing by Backtrack Productions. Production assistance by Zara Kozema and David Mackay. The executive producer is Linda Solomon Wood. This podcast received additional support from Creative BC and the province of British Columbia. Give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. That helps people find us. And I love reading your comments. Thanks for listening.